Adventist World Radio, from broadcast to baptism, powered by SID Media.
We are welcoming Pastor Choga on the line. Good afternoon to you, sir.
Good afternoon. How are you?
Very well, thank you. How are you, Pastor?
I'm doing very well.
Lovely. Thank you so much for joining us. We're continuing with our subject, generosity in a selfish world. That's our scripture in motion for this week. And of course, we are talking about this because it's important. It's human nature to focus on our own needs, wants, desires. And as Christians living in 2025, many of us understand this truth better than the others. So as Christians, we know God calls us to live a life of service to others. It's the example set by Christ himself. So how do our financial decisions reflect our faith, trust, and identity? So this is what we're going to be looking at today. So, Pastor, how can we use our financial resources to demonstrate that our identity is in Christ and not in our possessions?
So I think we are dealing with fixing our identity on Christ as opposed to something that Alan Barton, writing about the condition of mankind in the 21st century, has called status anxiety. So when he describes, I want to start with that status anxiety and then go to an identity that is built on Jesus Christ. When we're talking about status anxiety, we're talking about how people feel uneasy when they have not reached certain benchmarks that have been put by society to say, I've accomplished this, and because I've accomplished this, my life has a meaning, my life has a purpose, I own so much, I have so much education, and because of that, my life has meaning, has purpose. So we are finding meaning and purpose from accomplishments. And the status anxiety comes when we feel like we are lagging behind and others are ahead of us. This is a general characteristic of a material society. And yet on the opposite side, we have an identity that is built on Jesus Christ. And its difference is that the identity built on Jesus Christ is not built on accomplishment. Because the value that Jesus Christ gives us is not earned. It's actually given as a gift. Jesus dies for us on the cross, accomplishes everything on our behalf, and then he hands over the gift for us so that we cannot even be proud and boast about what we have gotten. So Jesus Christ is taking our focus from finding meaning and purpose from what we can do and finding meaning and purpose in what he has already done, which is redeeming us. So I think this change has to happen at a philosophical level where our minds move away from finding value from accomplishment and things and finding value in the sacrifice that Jesus Christ has done for us and the promise of the future that he has already put before us.
Now, how does a budget reflect a person's spiritual priorities?
So when we come to how we spend, I think more than anything, our spending shows where our heart is.
Yeah.
You can actually make a profile of a person and describe who they are just by looking at their spending. So if we are Christians, our spending should also follow in that. I think if I were to be practical, it would show where my tithe is. It would show where my offering is. It would show how much I have set aside to help those who are less fortunate and needy in my society. That would be where I go. So the biggest commitments, the biggest spendings show where my heart is. If the biggest spendings and the biggest commitments are on entertainment, they are on fashion, they are on what, I may profess that I'm a Christian, but where my money goes shows where my heart really is.
That's important. So if you were to just look at a person's payslip, and if you are listening out there, if you look at your payslip, you, yes, I'm talking about you who's listening to the pastor now. If you look at your payslip, it will tell you what your priorities are and where your heart is most likely leaning towards. Does this include the heart or just the mind, Pastor?
Actually, the Bible talks about the heart and the mind. The mind is the cognitive, presence that we have where we hold our beliefs. So you can actually believe and say, I'm a Christian, in your mind, accept the doctrines and everything. But the heart is actually the seat of emotion, where it goes deeper than just what you're accepting in your mind. And what is deep in the heart is what drives the actions. This is why the Bible acts like the mind can think, the heart can think. It's not like the heart can think literally, but the distinction between the heart and mind is showing the depth of how something affects us, whether it leads to action or it's just something that is in the mind. So sometimes we even say we are Christians and it's just a mental thing. It doesn't go deep into the heart to drive even our spending to show that we are Christians. And yet when you look at the early church, one distinction that made the world to be surprised and to be drawn to the people in the early church is that they were so different to the community around them. The community around them were stingy with their resources, but they were generous with their bodies, meaning that they were promiscuous. And yet here comes a new group of people with a new belief. They are generous with their resources and stingy with their bodies. And that shows that a real change has happened in their life.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. I like that. Now, Pastor, please help us and the listeners on how, you know, maybe identifying what kind of practices or disciplines can we adopt to help combat our natural tendencies towards self-centeredness.
Okay, because selfishness is the most natural and of human impulses, in any given situation, my first reaction is selfish. All of us, this is what we are. This is the default setting. So in order to be less selfish, we need to be deliberate. It needs to be planned. It needs to be programmed. It will not happen on its own. So if I'm going to be more generous, I have to sit down and put it in my planning. I'm happy we spoke about a budget before. So even in my budgeting process, I have to ask myself, am I giving room to generosity? Am I giving room to kindness? Or I'm closing it out? Waiting for it to happen naturally, That means it will never happen, because we, by default, we are selfish. So it begins with being deliberate. Like Job says, the thing that I didn't know, I sought for. So Job would go to the marketplace, he'd go to the communities and see where the needs are and do something about it. So you need to go out of your way and be deliberate.
So being deliberate really doesn't need training. So must I cultivate it? How do I cultivate that? Because if I'm deliberate and my natural inclination is towards selfishness, as you also confirmed, I don't see it going away automatically unless some kind of training.
So I'm saying you're being deliberate in being generous. So you're being deliberate in opposing your natural tendency. It's like someone who is exercising. The muscle that is exercised is the one that becomes strong.
I see.
I want to be fit, I will go out and run in the morning. It won't do itself. I have to force myself, get out of the blanket. Sometimes I'm feeling sleepy. Sometimes I'm feeling lazy, but I still push myself and get out because I know the benefit that I will get from running. So I think it's about putting myself in situations where I'm going to be generous, where I'm going to be looking at the needs of others and not just looking at my own needs. This is not trained theoretically. It's supposed to be practiced practically. It's supposed to be done. That's how the change happens.
I agree with you that. Let me share a bit of experience with you before we go to another question. Now, I think it's about some 6-7 years ago. I don't remember which year was this. A friend of mine takes me out, so we go out and we eat and we chat and, you know, catch up and all of that. And after that, we're at a restaurant. He then calls for a bill and he pays. You know, at the bill there, you're gonna have to also give a tip. And normally we just give a meager tip, just, you know, man, this guy, the tip, I've never seen a tip like that before. He gives a massive, and in my heart, I'm thinking, that's a generous tip. And I thought to myself, perhaps if I could spend time with guys like this and see how they do it, and maybe it would rub off me, because I'm used to just calculating rents and cents, so that I don't get broke just over a tip. I thought, maybe I should spend time and see how other generous people, that is, go about their lives and see the blessing that comes with generosity. And so I then began, you know, to say, hey, man, let's go out again. And I want to practice that now and all. Hey, but the first time you do it, you're thinking, no, but this tip is too much, man. But hey, so I thought I should just share that experience with you. Now,
And from your experience, you know, there's something I want to say. You see, the reason why we are stingy is it comes from a scarcity mentality to say, if I give, I'm going to lack. That's why the practice itself makes a difference, because you give and then you discover that I actually do not lack. And then this encourages you to say, okay, so this is, it can be done. It doesn't kill, and you become stronger. I think it's more or less like swimming. It's hard to teach, to sit someone down and teach them how to swim. The best way is just push them in the water and then they'll learn how to float. And with generosity, I think it's like that. You have to do it and you grow by doing it.
True. I love that. Now, how should we handle situations where our generosity is taken advantage of? And how does our faith guide our response to that?
So, I think generosity should not be done for the sake of generosity. We should be thoughtful. We should be very reflective in terms of how we practice generosity, because it's not all help that is helpful. There is actually some help that is harmful to the person who is receiving the help. So I believe in a situation where you are reflective about your actions, you're saying, okay, I'm doing this because I want to produce this result. And also being able to look back and say, is my generosity producing the desired result? Because yes, there are many people in our sinful world who will take advantage of my generosity. It's unfortunate for them, because taking advantage of my generosity is not going to harm me. It's going to harm them. But I also have to be responsible in that, even if it's not harming me, because me, I've already gained the benefit of being generous. But they are harming themselves by trying to take advantage of it. I should also be responsible to the extent of looking and saying, okay, is my help being helpful, or my help is getting to a point where it's harmful? For example, say I'm helping a lazy person and giving them handouts. What it means is that I am establishing I'm establishing and helping them to continue in their laziness. On the day that I will not be able to continue helping them, then it will be clear then that my help was not helpful. I should teach them rather to catch the fish on their own, so that they will not continue coming back to me for help. So we should help people to be able to help themselves, rather than for them to continue coming to us and giving handouts. And sometimes it can become a vicious cycle where I enjoy people coming back, I enjoy people saying thank you, I enjoy people depending on me. But we shouldn't build dependence. We should actually make people independent so they can stand on their own.
True. I think that's a very important thing, but to try and see if our helping would lead them to independence. Very, very powerful thoughts there. Now, when is it appropriate? I think this one is the last one before I let you go. When is it appropriate for a Christian to engage in a healthy dose, as it were, of selfishness, such as taking time for self-care or for pursuing personal goal? Is that even biblical, actually?
So I don't know if there is a healthy dose of selfishness. I think any dose of selfishness, even if it's a milligram, would not be okay. But I understand where you are coming from. Honestly, if we are going to be helpful, if we are going to be of service, we need to take care of ourselves. So when I teach stewardship, I always say stewardship is a four-way relationship. It's a relationship between the steward and the master, the relationship between the steward and the resources that the master has given them, the resources between the steward and other stewards who are around, because whatever we do will affect others. But the one that we least recognize is the relationship between the steward and themselves. Because if I'm going to accomplish my duties well, I have to take care of myself. True. I cannot be generous if I'm not healthy, if I'm not strong, if I can't work. So taking care of myself is very much a way of serving others. And when I stop caring about myself, it actually means I've stopped caring about others. So yes, there is a level to which the steward has to take care of themselves first, so that they are better able to serve others. This helps us from the challenge of overdoing things.
True.
So if I overpour out myself, I can end up with nothing to give because I've poured myself too much. If I give away everything I have, do I realize that I no longer have any capital to continue raising more funds in order to give to others? So giving does not necessarily mean I'll give everything I have and remain with nothing. I may actually need capital for my business to continue running so that I can be able to make more. And as long as my investments are helping me to make more so that I can be more useful, that cannot be considered selfishness. It's actually wise stewardship.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. And the good question, I'm laughing here because I'm seeing a comment here. He says, "Hi guys, are you trying to drown God's people?"
Oh, drowning them in what? Too much information.
Perhaps milking them dry with giving.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So there should always be a balance between our ability. It's like say this is a cook in a military camp. They should divide their money between buying the pots and the ingredients for the food, and also buying the ingredients for the food and the pots and the stoves and whatsoever. If they spend all the money in the stoves and the pots, they won't be any food to give. So there's always that balance. So I should balance what I'm giving out and my ability to be able to continue cooking tomorrow and have something to give to people. So giving should always balance those two sides.
And here's a comment I thought I was going to leave you. It's a follow-up, actually. They're saying, no, we don't mean that. We're saying, telling us to push them into the water to teach them to swim. Yeah, I think I think you got.
Yeah, you got to push people into the water.
Yes, push you into the water. But there's this English term that says you threw me in the deep end, and if you were not in the deep end, you probably but not going to make it. But if you are swimming out to make it alive, and that would probably help you then to be able to be generous. I don't know. That's my view, Pastor. What do you think?
Yeah. I think the reaction that says if we push people, they will drown is looking at one side, and I understand where they're coming from, but there's the other side of seeing the challenge, the size of the challenge we're looking at. Selfishness is so huge, it will not go easily. So if you look at the size of a challenge, it will actually tell you your response and your reaction. You can't respond to it as if you're dealing with a small thing. That's why we use that image of pushing someone into the water. It's because of how big the challenge is and how serious and how much effort we need to put in terms of dealing with it. I think that balances out how I wish that a concept should be understood. Yeah.
Beautiful, beautiful. Now, here's a question again that's coming on the line. Good afternoon, Brother Zama and the pastor. My relatives once accused me of being too good and that I should just stop it. They said I was trying to win the public favor. What would the pastor say about that?
I think people will always judge us for what we do, but the best judge is God. If my motive is right and it's good, I shouldn't be worried too much about what people say, because people will always have their opinion of what we do. And these opinions are various. If you chase them, you tear yourself apart trying to chase this opinion and that opinion. God has given us different gifts and we act in different ways. And as long as my motive is right, and I believe I'm doing the right thing, I don't think I should be too concerned about what people say.
Is there such a thing as a giving fatigue or generosity fatigue?
Generosity fatigue. I will, in order to answer that question, I'll take you back to the discussion we had yesterday. If the motive is right, the result will be right. If the motive is wrong, yes, definitely there is a chance that you're going to be fatigued. Just imagine, if my motive is wrong, I'm giving because I'm expecting something in return, and what I expected in return doesn't come, I'm going to be disappointed. I'll be discouraged. Or I give and people are not grateful. They don't show that they appreciate what I'm doing. I'm going to be really crushed. But if my motive is right and I'm not expecting anything in return, and the payoff I'm getting is actually coming from the generosity itself, that's the payoff I'm looking for, then I don't see any reason reason why I should get to a point where I am fatigued.
Man, thank you so much. Pastor, this is lovely, man. Thank you so much. I've got a message there. I think that message that I was reading to you now, it comes from Brother Emmanuel, who was asking that, you know, being accused by relatives. And I've got the response there. Brother Emmanuel, what a lovely accusation, though. We must all aspire to have such allegations made against us.
Wow, beautiful. I like that.
I love that, too. Pastor, thank you so much for your time, man. We're going to be talking to you again tomorrow, same time and same place.
Thank you for having me, Zama.
Lovely. Have a good one.
You are tuned into Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media.